Miss an interview? Listen to it now at 1043thefan.com. Brought to you by First Bank. You work hard for your business, so should your bank. Talk to a First Bank business specialist today. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC.
Sports Radio 1043 The Fan. Every Saturday morning, it's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Terry takes you inside the outdoors. You know, hunting, fishing, camping. It's Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. Now, here's Terry.
Good morning. What a beautiful day out. And we've got a lot to talk about today. We're going to cover a lot of ground. If you were following us on Facebook, you know that we are having a great giveaway. We'll tell you about the prizes a little bit more. But I posted my article on outdoor survival. And during the course of today's show, we are going to give away prizes with three trivia questions based on outdoor survival. And we're going to discuss it at two or three times during the show. With all the people getting outdoors, I think it's important. Now, this isn't going to be this naked and afraid, you're out with nothing. This is you're going on your day hike, you're hunting, you're camping, you're fishing. You get lost or injured. What do you do? What do you need to have with you so that inconvenience doesn't turn into a tragedy? And we're gonna talk pretty good about that. So if you go outside a lot, it'll pay to listen and maybe even win a nice prize. Also, Rocky Mountain National Park opened this week. We will have Kirk's Fly Shop on in the second hour, and we're going to talk about not only the fishing, the fly fishing up in the park, but we're going to talk about the Big Thompson is fishing fantastic. And there's some actual, even with the high water, good floats going on the Colorado River. Of course, Nate Zielinski will join us. And in our Colorado Clays segment today, we are going to talk about the aspect of dominant eye and how it affects your shooting. So we got a lot to cover today. But right now, let's go right to the phones. And joining us from Denver Discount Fishing Tackle is Austin Parr. Good morning, Austin.
Good morning, Terry. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you on. Now, you and I are going to cover some ground this morning. We're going to talk a lot of fishing, but we're going to talk some outdoor survival. We're going to have a trivia question while you're on the air. I don't know if it'll be the first or second segment. But why don't we start off by telling people what the trivia prizes are today, the three we're going to give away.
Absolutely. So we are giving away three Leatherman folding knives that have approximate values of $40 each. They're really nice blades, super sharp and well put together. So looking forward to meeting some folks in store finally now and over the last little bit. Going to love to give away some of those knives.
And what we're going to do is I posted an article that I wrote for the Denver Post on my Facebook page, Terry Wickstrom Outdoors. I posted that article Wednesday during the week. And it's a pretty good outline of my opinions, along with ones I've gathered from others. Now, just to qualify this, I've been doing outdoor activities all my life. I've been involved in search and rescue. I've done training courses. I've been through training courses. And I've interacted with a lot of people, and not everybody is going to agree 100% on my feeling of what's better and my feeling of what's worse, and you and I are going to talk about that. But for sakes of the trivia today, my opinion is what counts. So what we'll do is the answers are actually in there. We may talk about the answers during the show and actually give them to you, but the answers we will at some point, maybe after they've been won, or maybe we'll give one out ahead of time and you'll have a heads up. But the answers are definitely in that article. And we're going to talk about that. And when we do, we'll have some fun with it too. But before we even get to that, Austin, the people are getting out. It's a beautiful weekend. They want to go fishing. Let's kind of go around and update people on what's going on in angling right now.
There's all kinds of stuff going on right now. And really, if you're a fisherman in Colorado, particularly one that likes targeting warm water species, this is the time that you live for right now. So water temperatures in the majority of our Front Range lakes are starting to reach toward that 70-degree mark. Walleyes are very much done spawning and moving into their summertime patterns. Yesterday, we found them at Cherry Creek in as shallow as 6 feet of water. And they are very active when they're up shallow like that on anything from jigs and leeches all the way through your various blade baits like a Johnson Thinfisher or Hutch Blade. Even swim baits such as a Berkeley Ripple Shad can be very effective right now. But the other thing that you'll find as you move out to your Eastern Plains lakes, whether it's southeast or northeast or into the edge of Nebraska, these walleyes are going to start moving into your structure as well. So by structure on the edges, I mean trees and weeds and bushes, and you can really catch them bass fishing. And then the beautiful thing about doing that is that you'll catch a lot of bass doing the same thing. So it's a fantastic way to go right now. Panfish are up shallow, and you can catch them on anything from live minnows to little roadrunner jigs. Small curly-tailed grubs on weedless heads can all be really effective. And, you know, the smallmouth around town are going as well. So we're seeing a little bit of spawn mode going on at Chatfield at the moment, but still some very, very good numbers, on, especially on the edges of the gravel pits right now on things like Wacky Rigs, Senkos, and Ned Rigs all have been incredibly effective.
You know, I want to go back to the panfish a little bit. We talk about panfish, and we kind of covered the ponds pretty extensively over the last few weeks. We've talked about the panfish and the bass are going in the ponds, and that's still going on. It's a great way to get out. They're still very catchable. They're still very active. But why don't you take me maybe through some of your more favorite of the reservoirs for panfish, whether it's Pueblo for crappies or somewhere in town for bluegills or crappies or out on the eastern plains. What are some of the places for crappies, bluegills, perch that you like to go?
So in the metro area, Cherry Creek has a very nice population of white crappie, and then you can slip over to Quincy and catch a good population of black crappie over there, particularly with how much timber and bushes are in that reservoir. But one of my favorites, as you mentioned there, is Pueblo Reservoir. And the nice thing about that lake is that the water level, especially over the last couple of years, has remained very, very consistent. And with that consistency on that water level, those panfish are really being able to spawn very, very well down there, and the crappie population has just been booming. So getting on the outside edges of your trees and all the way into your trees and just dabbling on the tip of your rod, you can maybe get a little longer rod or fish a slip bobber. But working those edges, you can try a live minnow. You can try a little panfish assassin or a small gulp minnow underneath that bobber. But especially the slip bobbers, you can pitch them right on the edge of the trees and just kind of wiggle your rod tip a little bit and give a little vertical jig presentation right on the edges of those, and you can absolutely hammer them. But the one thing I do want to make mention of is that unlike a walleye that'll really pick something up off the bottom, usually a crappie is not going to be eating something that's down from them. A lot of times you have to have eye level or up for the majority of the times. So positioning yourself maybe slightly higher than you normally would for some of those fish suspended in those trees can be definitely more effective.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And you mentioned a slip bobber. I want to, if people, you know, bobbers sometimes are thought of as not cool, but even a clip-on bobber, if you don't have to fish too deep, but a slip bobber, it reels right down to the bait, so you've got a compact little package that you can cast back into that brush, and then your line slips through till it gets to a bobber stop to the appropriate depth. And because, as you mentioned, crappies tend to feed up, you can keep adjusting that depth until you find where it seems to be most effective. But it's such an incredible way to present a lure, and you made a comment you can jig it in place, and people don't think about that. You know, you cast it out even in open water, but in the trees or whatever. And if there's a little bit of wave action, it's going to give it a little jigging motion on its own. But you certainly can give action to that, and you hardly move it any distance at all when you do that.
Exactly. And that can be very effective. And then, you know, your line will go down, so it's sitting toward the bottom. You can try a weedless jig head a lot of times if you're in the heavy timber. But the one thing I do want to mention, that if anyone's out there fishing a slip bobber, one of the biggest things that I see guiding that people make a mistake with is they try and overly set the hook with a slip bobber. When that bobber goes down, the biggest key is to just raise that rod tip and just start reeling at a fairly aggressive pace. And that will hook your fish 90% of the time. But setting the hook, you may only get 20% of your fish. So it's very critical to not be lifting and doing a hard hook set because of that additional slack line that goes out on the water and then down to your bait from the bobber.
That's exactly right, because they set the hook with the line tight to the bobber and not tight to the lure. And they
exactly.
Set it, and it just moves the bobber, and you just alert the fish. If you are going to hook set at all, at least reel down until you feel the fish, and then maybe give
exactly.
A little sweep additional, because yeah, you're right. You've got to reel down until you're tight to the bait and the fish, where the bobber isn't keeping your line in a bow. Another technique that I like on the eastern plains a lot, where they don't have, when the water's not up in the trees, and where the crappies maybe are, maybe they're relating to a riprap bank or something, and that's to take a small jig and swim it. But you have to almost cast it out, count it down, and swim it till you start getting hits, and then don't go deeper than that. Do you try that technique at times?
I have, absolutely. And going with something like a roadrunner jig and a small curly tail grub that you can swim into the open water is a very good technique. But just as you mentioned, the whole key is consistency. So as you're counting that down, you have to know the exact level that you're at every single time, because the majority of your fish are going to be sitting at that same level. So if you're fishing deep every single time, you may be going right underneath them. So making sure that you're consistent on what you're doing, and then when you get that bite, really ensuring that you know exactly what you did so that you can duplicate it will really help success in the long run.
All right, let's switch gears and let's talk about maybe some trout and some other things that are going on. We did get a question on the text. Have you heard anything about Twin Lakes? Somebody would like an update on that.
Twin Lakes, I haven't heard a ton of reports up there except for one. He said it was a little bit slow for him, but he was catching some lake trout on some tube jigs near the outlet area. So I have not heard a whole lot other than that particular one. Twin Lakes is kind of interesting because it kind of flies under the radar for a lot of reports that I hear. I don't really make it up that way a heck of a lot. But right now, the more of the lake trout reports that I'm hearing have been coming from Williams Fork. Williams Fork, there's not been a ton of fish being caught, but the fish that are being caught are very, very nice. A lot of 30-inch plus fish, and I know everyone makes mention of it, but if anyone gets a real big lake trout like that, the importance of releasing something like that to help preserve our fishery is incredibly important. But then additionally, Granby, although not producing the giants for the most part, has been doing better for numbers of lake trout with a few big ones mixed in on top of it. And then I have been hearing that some of those brown trout have been very active along the shorelines, particularly the rocky shorelines up at Granby.
Yeah, I hear that all the time, and I've actually fished those. I'll throw in 2 cents on Twin Lakes, too. You don't hear a lot on Twin Lakes, but from anglers I know and from the parks and wildlife, there is a pretty substantial lake trout population in Twin Lakes.
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember which area. Of the two, one fish is better for numbers and one for size. And of the size, there's some giants in there, some real giants. And a lot of people stay closed-mouthed about it because they, you know, you won't believe this, but some fishermen don't want to give up their spot.
Yes,
but they do have it. You know, it's definitely worth some effort, and there's other trout in there too. Obviously,
absolutely. You mentioned the other one that I was going to say just real quick. The other one that goes under the radar a lot that I hear very good things about, kind of hush hush, is a Turquoise Lake. That's another one. If some people are looking for good ones, that's another thought to maybe think about heading up there.
You're absolutely right. And there's, you know, a lot of these high mountain lakes are going to start opening up. You know, Rocky Mountain National Park opened. We're going to talk about that later. Things like Joe Wright, eventually, they probably aren't ice-free yet. We'll get there soon, but Chambers and Long Draw. So we're going to start getting more and more places for trout fishing, too. In general, just for rainbows, what are you hearing both down low and across the state?
So around the Front Range, everything for the rainbows has been slowing down a little bit. Chatfield and Aurora are still seeing some rainbows being caught, but places like Cherry Creek, they're slowing down quite a bit. So if you're thinking about trout, I would certainly be thinking about heading to the high country, particularly up in South Park at the moment. Spinney Mountain has been fishing very good. And then the other lake I've been hearing just incredible things about is up at Antero. I'm sure Nate can go into some additional detail with him guiding up there consistently. But up toward that region, definitely a thought process to go and throw some tube jigs or some Tasmanian devils. Those both are going to be really productive. And then if you're a fly angler, you're going to start to be seeing some damselflies coming off. And we're really in the peak of the chironomids at the moment. So that's been very, very good up that way. And then going a little bit further north, going up toward places like Steamboat and Stagecoach, both those particular state parks are open at the moment, and the fishing has been fantastic. The pike's been a little bit more slow at Stagecoach than what I've normally been hearing, but the trout action for large trout, both at Steamboat and Stagecoach, has been good. A lot of tube jigs up there, and then I really like gulp minnows on those particular bodies of water. Working them along the developing weed edges can really bode really well for some great success.
Now, what about the weekend angler that just wants to go out with some power bait? You sell a lot of power bait. We know how effective it is. What if you're, you know, not into maybe a lot of presentations, but you just want to go somewhere and throw out some power bait and have a chance at some rainbows? Give me a couple spots.
Terryall definitely comes to mind first. That one right there is certainly a good one. And then the other one that everyone, I'm not 100% on the status of everyone. If you're anyone thinking about heading to Georgetown, that could potentially still be closed until the end of the month being in Clear Creek County. So definitely think about that. But the other one that's kind of close to town that's at a little bit higher elevation is Monument Lake. And Monument, it gets regular stockings of trout, and you can catch a lot of fish there. And then another unique spot that's not talked about very much is Gross Reservoir. So Gross is within an hour of town easily. Lots of rainbows up in there with a shot at some larger fish as well.
All right, now we're going to change things up. I'm going to tell a little story when I was out in the outdoors about how I don't think I was in danger, but I survived, obviously. And I want people to understand, the first trivia question at the end of the story are going to be, what did I do wrong here? And I'll give you a few hints after I tell the story. And then we're going to come back and talk survival. And, you know, you and I are going to agree on a lot of things like planning and things like that. I was out, this is back in my Minnesota days, and I had I wanted to go out and check some game trails. And it was getting a little later in the day than probably should get out. This is winter, and the temperature that night was going to be about 20 below. But I dressed properly. I had the right clothes with me. I went out. I went on the game trail. I realized I was getting back further in the woods than I should have. I got a little careless, and that's not the answer to the question, though. And I realized that walking out in the north woods in Minnesota in the dark would be very easy to get turned around and really get lost deep in the woods. So I was dressed for the weather. I started a fire. I built a small lean-to keep the heat of the fire in there. And if I stayed awake, I was going to be fine, and I would walk out at daylight. Well, if something would happen, if I would have fallen asleep, search and rescue would have probably taken a long time to find me. Fortunately, the moon came up, and I was able to – it was like daylight, and I saw my tracks, and I walked out. But in my article, there's one key. The article I posted on Wednesday – there's one key that's part of the planning process that I didn't do, and I didn't mention it here, so that's going to be your key. We're going to take a break, Austin, and when we come back, you and I are going to talk about that planning process, and we'll probably even mention all the different keys at that time. And whoever is the first one to text 303-713-1043, that's the standard fan text number, 303-713-1043 with the correct answer to what mistake I made, they'll get one of those Leatherman knives. So, Austin, we'll have them put you on hold. We'll come back and talk some survival right here on Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan.
But the horns, they blowing that sound. Way on down south.
You're listening to Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan. We are talking to Austin Parr about both fishing and outdoor survival. Good morning again, Austin.
Absolutely, Terry. This, you know, survival is just something that I think a lot of people don't think about when it comes to preparation. They think about getting out hunting and fishing, but I just, as far as survival is concerned, I think it's a really important topic to touch on.
Well, right now, with so many people getting outdoors, and by the way, we have a correct answer to the trivia. I'll cover that in just a minute. But, you know, and they think, well, I'm just going for a day hike. The weather's great down here. Well, it's not necessarily great up there, or it can change so quickly. And we're going to go through some of that, you and I. First of all, I think the most critical time for your safety when you're going into the outdoors, whether you're going hiking, fishing, hunting, you're going camping, you're just taking the family on a backpack trip, whether you're just out strolling a trail, is your planning, your thought and preparation before you go. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, people really don't consider that very much. They say, okay, we're just going to go up and we're going to be fine, but they don't consider what potentially could happen, or it's just like anything, you know, it's preventative maintenance. Trying to make sure that something is not going to happen, but if it does, being prepared for it is critical.
Now, I'm going to take you through what I did wrong on my trip, and then you and I will go through the planning a little bit, how it should go. And what I did wrong is I didn't tell anybody where I was going. I just went. I was dressed properly. I had the right layers. I had the right clothing. I had the right equipment with me to survive. But how long might I have been out there in the North Woods had I really gotten lost? They wouldn't have even known where to start searching until they found my truck. And I could have been in 100 places around, you know, that aren't far from where I lived in northern Minnesota, because the whole area was pretty much wilderness. And so by not telling something, so when you're doing the planning process, and you and I will go through some of these things and how you approach them, But before you leave, tell somebody where you're going. If you change and go to a different place, at least send them a text or something, because having been a search and rescue, knowing where to start, just we may get to you that day if we know where you're at, if you get reported missing. If not, it could be days or hours or who knows how long. Now, the things that I'm going to mention, I'll ask what you think. To me, the number one thing you got to watch out for most people, especially day hikes, is hypothermia. And I'm going to talk more about that later in the hour. But obviously, your clothing is very important, right?
Definitely. And the type of clothing that you're putting on, not only quantities, but making sure, especially as you're heading up to the mountains, making sure you're doing a lot of synthetics and avoiding a lot of your cotton materials is absolutely critical.
Yeah, there's a saying in the outdoors that cotton kills. And there's a reason for that. It absorbs moisture. Cotton's great if you're in the Sahara Desert or if you're walking around the house, it's comfortable. But hypothermia is going to probably be your biggest challenge. And by the way, hypothermia can set in at 60 degrees. The most common temperature is 50 degrees. People think you have to be, you know, 20 below. Most time when you're out, when it's 10 or 20 below or even 30 or 40 above, you're really dressed for it. It's those in-between times when you didn't bring the right clothing and didn't wear the right layers. And then once you get hypothermia, you get in severe trouble. So dressing properly, you know, avoiding cotton under layers, putting on, we have so many great synthetics now that wick away from the body, and then some kind of an outer shell, and take some kind of a windbreaker or shell with you, even if you don't wear it on a day hike. They roll up so small now, and they'll make such a difference. Don't you believe?
Yeah, and I mean, especially if you're heading up to any type of high elevation situation where the weather can change so quickly, you can get into a situation where you're all of a sudden disoriented after a big storm that comes through. You get into the wrong draw, you're wet, sun setting, and all of a sudden you're in trouble.
Well, and that brings up another point. Know how to navigate. Have things with you, like have both a compass and a GPS.
Yes, absolutely. GPS can fail. You can run out of batteries. It can get wet and get ruined, whereas a compass, you're in much better position. And a lot of people think that they can just navigate with how the sun's going down or anything, especially in Colorado. But you can be into the wrong drainage. You can all of a sudden go the wrong way. And when you're out in the forest and you're in the national forest and you're dealing with places that are literally hundreds of thousands of acres large and you're in the wrong draw, you can all of a sudden things start looking the same.
One of the main things of using a compass, and I'm always amazed by how many people in Colorado don't use a compass just because of what you say. They think they can triangulate off a mountain, is look at a map before you go. Study it a little bit and at least know general directions that you could go in where you would intersect a river or a road. Because once you intersect one of those, and if you've studied the terrain, you may know where that goes. Now, a river can be bad because you could come to a cliff or a waterfall and not be able to traverse it. But at least know a general direction that will bring you to safety.
Absolutely. And going in that direction can really, you know, knowing that piece of information can save your life and save a lot of discomfort from having to happen.
Well, and then I want to address some of the when people pack for what they would call a survival kit. They're going up the mountains, but if they would get lost or injured, I do these survival shows once or twice a year. And I always ask people, what do you need with you? And so many people say food and water. And when I was in survival training, they used to tell us the 3-3-3-3 scenario. You can go 3 minutes without air. You can go 3 hours without shelter. In most situations, you can go up to 3 days without water. And you can go up to 3 weeks without food. Now, not that food isn't going to make you more comfortable and maybe help you feel better if you're out there and something's going on. And you should always stay properly hydrated. And maybe as the fourth or fifth item in my survival kit, I may have some water purification tablets. But I'm looking at, and my three main things are always going to be signaling, shelter, and fire. And I don't know, what priorities do you want to add, or is there things you do that may be a little different there?
You know, the fire is always a big deal for me, and making sure the other thing that I always carry is some form of a multi-tool to be able to potentially build a shelter and have a tool to be able to cut something down with, But having a nice fire starter that's waterproof, I like a flint along with a magnesium flint stick. Those guys really work well. And if you can have your knife there with you and be able to find some dry kindling, that can help in a big, big way to get a signal fire not only, but then also a fire that can settle you down and make sure that you're not panicking into a situation. It has you. It will let you stay in a particular position.
I couldn't have said it better. We're going to have to wrap this up in just a couple minutes, but or maybe it's a few seconds. But do you sell fire starter kits at the store?
Unfortunately, we don't do a lot of survival as far as fire starter kits down there. However, certainly we have a selection of the knives as we are going to be giving away today.
All right. And what I'm going to tell people is carry two forms of a fire starter with you. A lighter or matches are fine, but the metal ones you mentioned, doesn't matter if they get wet. They burn extremely hot, and they don't take up any room, so they're great. I'm going to talk more about survival later on this hour, and then again, we have two more. Tell people again about the knives, and then we're going to let you go.
Absolutely. So we're giving away three different knives. One of them's already given away, it sounds like. But they're made by Leatherman. They're a folding pocket knife that I like a lot, about a $40 value each.
And if people want more information, they listen to us talk fishing, they want to get some fishing gear, tell them how they find you or book a guide trip with you. How do they find you?
Absolutely. I'm a Discount Fishing Tackle. We're at 2645 South Santa Fe Drive, which is six blocks south of Evans on the west side of Santa Fe.
All right, my friend, stay safe and go out and catch some fish. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you so much, as always, Terry. I appreciate it.
You bet. You're listening to Terry Wickstrom Outdoors on 104.3 The Fan.
You work hard for your business. So should we. That's why First Bank offers commercial real estate loans, business lines of credit, and online cash management solutions. With tools and services designed to make your business run easier, your day could have less this and more this. Visit eFirstBank.com/business to learn more. First Bank, business banking for good. Member FDIC.
First Bank. Banking for good.